The mighty 690 KGGF, and currently 44 degrees outside, and it is Wednesday, so everybody knows what time it is. It's time for Green Side Up, and joining us in studio this morning is David Scrantz and Wendy Powell. And ladies, good morning. How are you doing today?
Good morning.
Well, it's good to have you guys in studio today, and we will get to your main topics here in just a moment. But David, you did say we have a few programs that you guys are putting on.
Yes, we have quite a few programs coming up next month. First, I wanted to mention that registration for Walk Kansas, this is the last day to get in on that before it closes. So I believe the website to go online to register is walkkansas.org, or you can...
Walk Kansas Online.
Or walkkansasonline.org. Thanks, Wendy.
You're welcome.
Or, of course, you can call our extension office in Independence, and Debbie can help you with that. And on April 8th, we have Hitting the Target, which is a sheep and goat workshop coming up that evening. We'll have Dr. Allison Crane, the sheep and goat specialist from K-State, down. She'll be one of the speakers, and Wendy and I will also be speaking on different topics as well. So there'll be a lot of great information for producers on vaccine handling, parasite control, common diseases of sheep and goats. And then on April 14th, I'll be doing a workshop called From Egg to Chick. It will be on incubating chicken eggs at the Community College in Independence. So that one will actually be at 11 a.m. Space for that one is limited, but both of these programs, you can come in person or virtually. You can join us depending on what you're most comfortable with. And then on April 29th, we'll be having a nuisance wildlife management meeting in Parsons at the Research Center starting at 6 p.m. And Dr. Drew Ricketts, the wildlife specialist from campus, will be our guest speaker for that.
All right. So you got a lot of programs coming up, and it just does beg the one question, which does come first, the egg or the chicken? So,
well, in this case, it's the egg.
So, all right. Well, again, it's good to have you ladies in studio this morning. And David, we'll go ahead and start with you. And of course, spring has arrived. I think I got the right one here. Is that?
Yep.
Yes.
That's
okay.
Me.
Okay. Yeah, I have two things there that they're going to be talking about. But spring has arrived. So with the change of the season, wildlife of all sorts will start becoming more active.
Yeah, so spring has arrived, which I know I'm really excited about. And with
just the warmer weather,
yeah, exactly. And with the weather warming up, wildlife will start becoming more active. So some wildlife species will be coming out of hibernation. Others, of course, such as deer and rabbits, are giving birth to young. So as well as seeing adult wildlife more often, you'll also have a chance of seeing those babies running around. And then for some wildlife species, they're also more active this time of year, which means there's a higher chance of seeing them on the road. So you want to make sure to watch out for them. And during this time of year, wildlife are more active. We're more active because we're happy for the warmer weather to be outdoors. So there's a higher chance of human-wildlife interactions. And unfortunately, some of these don't work out so well for the wildlife. So I just wanted to talk about a few things this morning, just to kind of cover the do's and don'ts if you happen to see wildlife around.
All right, and we'll start with those. So one of the things that you could see sometimes is some wildlife that can appear to be orphaned. So what should you do in those cases if you do see that?
Yeah, so this is definitely a concern when you see young wildlife by itself, because of course you're worried that something might be wrong and you don't want to leave it alone where it might not survive. However, there are about as many different ways that wildlife raise offspring. And each animal has its own way of doing things, just kind of how with people, parenting styles will differ a little bit. So some of the reasons that the wildlife baby that you find may be on its own is not necessarily that it's orphaned. Some species, such as turtles, do not need parental care to survive, so they're kind of on their own from the very beginning, so you won't see them with their mom. While other species that are commonly prey animals, such as deer and rabbit, rabbits, they actually use a parenting strategy in which the mothers leave the babies on their own for hours at a time, sometimes even for the whole day while they look for food, and to also avoid drawing predators to the attention of the young, because like deer, the fawns, they have, you know, those white dots when they're very young, and that acts as a camouflage for them. And in addition, wildlife parents often hide when humans are around. So sometimes they'll be there, they just went for cover and are watching from a distance because they see people and are hoping the camouflage of the baby will protect them. And then we, of course, won't see the mom because she's hidden. So while the parents may not be visible, it is best to assume a baby wild animal is being cared for, unless there is evidence that the parents have been killed or that it is not thriving. This can be evident when a baby rabbit or fawn is seen with no parents in sight. Rabbits and deer, again, are both prey species, meaning many animals feed on them, especially the offspring. And in order to avoid predator detection, mothers of these species hide their babies and only visit one or two times a day to nurse. So if one is found, do leave it alone unless there are signs that harm may have come to the mother and the baby needs some attention, because the mother will return when she feels it is safe. If you must move them for protection from a dog, or maybe you find them in your lawn when you're getting ready or are mowing the lawn, or another hazard, you can carefully pick them up and place them in another secure location nearby. Or even better yet, if you can, just leave your dog on a leash or wait to mow the grass in that area until the animals have moved on. And wildlife specialists do say that it is a myth that if a baby has been touched or moved, that the mother will neglect it. The mother may be unsure when she smells humans, but in most cases, the mother will still come back and take care of it.
Yeah, we've had to do that. They're not wildlife, but we had to do that with a few of our kittens. And the mother was around, and she saw, and like we were moving them to like a better spot to put them into a blanket, but she came run over, meow, meow, and started hissing at us. And she was like, why are you touching my babies? And we just were, it's okay, it's okay. Mm-hmm. We're just moving them over here. And then she looked at them, she looked at us, and then started sniffing them and started licking them, basically taking the scent off, you know. Yeah. So, but she was kind of funny. A few days after, she didn't mind us being closer to them, because I guess she realized, hey, we're not going to hurt them, you know, we're just moving them to a different, although she tried to move them again because she didn't, she didn't like the area we moved them to.
That wasn't the spot she had picked out.
Like, no, I don't like this area as much. She moved them like to another corner, so yeah. She's like, this one over here. All right, well, again, that is kind of a myth, though, that the mother will neglect them. But what are some signs that they do need help, though?
Yeah, if a baby is crying or making lots of noise, it might be orphaned. This could be a sign that its mother hasn't been back in the regular couple hours or since the day before. So it's hungry and it's calling out. It's looking for its mother. Healthy wildlife babies that are waiting for mom to come back are quiet, so predators do not find them. And then if you see any insects on the baby, this is a good clue that it is orphaned. If the mother is taking care of it, she will be keeping those insects away. And then if babies go too long without eating, they get cold and dehydrated. So cold babies and those with wrinkled skin, which is a sign of dehydration, or sometimes you can see their eyes look a little sunken in, probably have not been fed and are most likely orphaned. So if you see any of these signs, it's best to contact the Department of Wildlife, or you can contact us at the Extension office and we can get you those phone numbers. It's not recommended for the general public to raise orphan wildlife, and it's best if they're raised by experts and then can later go back out into the wild.
Absolutely. That way they can get old enough where they can get released back to the wild. But occasionally, you know, of course, you know, Kansas, we get some wild storms around here. So unfortunately, what happens is, you know, with like nests, they get blown out of a tree. So if you find a baby bird that has fallen out of a nest, what should we do with that baby bird?
Yeah, this is actually a question I got once or twice last year. Finding baby birds or a fallen nest is actually a pretty common wildlife interaction, especially like you mentioned, after a storm. In this circumstance, remember that the mother bird does know best, so if possible, return the baby bird to the nest. Alternatively, a nest can be made by placing a small cardboard box in a nearby tree or bush that you can place the baby bird in, and the mother will find them there if you're not able to find or reach the original nest. If the bird looks young but has a full covering of feathers, it is most likely a fledgling just learning to fly. So if you put it back in the nest, it may jump right back out when placed there. This is normal. The mother is likely nearby and will take care of the fledgling until it can fend for itself and successfully fly.
I mean, I've seen that before. It's bad to kind of laugh at, but it's kind of funny to see when you see them jumping, they just on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying. It's their hardest to learn.
Really hard.
But I mean, and they eventually learn it, obviously, but it is just a little still, I don't want to see them get hurt, which I don't think they usually do get hurt, but it's kind of interesting just to watch the way they'll jump and then they'll just fall straight to the ground, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of a tough learning experience.
Yes,
for them.
But then they get a hold of it, and then they look so graceful when they're flying. So.
Yep, it's kind of like us learning how to ride a bike.
Or us learning to walk. I mean,
yeah, that too.
We try to take a step, boom, fall straight to the ground. We're just like, well, this isn't good.
Yeah, not what we had in mind.
Exactly. All right. So, again, a lot, lots of different ways. So be sure to, you know, again, there's also others, not just birds. So if you see any types of wildlife that are trying to cross the road, what should you do? Because one of the ones that I see quite a bit are turtles, obviously. Poor guys trying to cross the road. What I've tried to do quite a bit is if I do see a turtle, I'll pull to the side of the road. I'll make sure nobody's coming either direction. And I'll pick him up and put him on the side of the road the way he was facing. It looked like the way he was going, to try to get him across the road, because I don't want him to get hit, because obviously it's going to take a while for him to get over there.
Yeah, and turtles is actually what I was specifically going to talk about with this question, because while raccoons and other types of wildlife we kind of see crossing the road year-round, turtles are one specific animal that we'll see more or have a better chance of seeing crossing the road during this time of year, especially in late spring, because female turtles will leave the pond and search for a place to lay eggs. So late spring is the time of year that turtles are very active, and you want to watch for them crossing the road, because it takes a long time for turtles to grow up and be mature egg-laying turtles. So these animals are especially important to their population, and of course turtles are also beneficial wetland inhabitants and may indirectly contribute to a strong fish population. So of course watch for them on the road if you see one, or even if you see a rock or a piece of mud on the road, that might be a turtle. So if you can, slow down to try and avoid it. And just like you mentioned, you stopped to help the turtles cross the road. And just like you were explaining, you pick up that turtle and you take them over to the side of the road in the direction that they were heading. And of course, just make sure never pick up a turtle by its tail, as that can cause injury. And then, of course, with spring rains, that will increase the likelihood of turtles crossing the road from overwintering habitats to breeding wetlands. And it is important to drive slowly and carefully when driving past a wetland or habitat that looks to be home for wildlife.
Yeah, and the other thing, after you handle a turtle as quickly as possible, wash your hands really good, because apparently
definitely
they can carry salmonella. So, mm-hmm. But anytime I do see a turtle, if I can, unless it's like a huge snapping turtle, which I'm just like, stay away from those. But if it's just like your, you know, snare box turtle or something like that, I'll grab him by his sides and take him over there and put him in the. There was one time I took a turtle across and I put him down, and he turned around and he just kind of looked at me me, and then you start walking off, like almost like saying, "Hey, thanks."
Yeah.
So, and one more thing, do we want to do talk about here? We have just a few minutes. Is what about snakes? Of course, snakes are kind of been in a slumber period, but it's going to be about that time they start popping back up again.
Yep. After winter, snakes will start to emerge as the weather continues to warm up to forage for food and go about their business. The majority of snakes are harmless and non-venomous. However, there are a couple of snakes that are venomous, and if you get bit by one of those, it is a medical emergency. So it's best not to handle snakes unless you are completely sure what type of snake it is and have identified it. Most snakes prefer to be hidden and not to come in contact with people, although I do always notice when it first starts warming up and snakes start getting active, I'll see them soaking up the sun on the road, of course, trying to warm up. But other than that, they usually kind of keep to themselves and are in hiding. And while snakes, of course, aren't one of the most popular animals for most people, it is important to remember that they are an important food source for such animals as owls, kestrels, foxes, and minks. And of course, in turn, snakes also help keep rodent and small animal populations in control.
And like I said, for the most part, if you leave them alone, they'll leave you alone because they're scared of you. You're humongous to them. So.
Right, yeah. So. Even though I know personally I'm not that big a fan of snakes.
I am not a fan of snakes either.
I usually go the other direction. But yeah, snakes aren't a fan of us either.
Yeah. They're just like, it's a giant. All right, well, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll have Wendy Powell. She'll be on here in the second part of the show. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this hump day morning in Southeast Kansas. It's time for the second part of Green Side Up, and joining us this morning is, of course, David Skrantz and Wendy Powell, and we'll now be talking to Wendy Powell. And Wendy, good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you, Kyle?
I'm doing good. It's good to have you back in studio. And what is going to be your main topic today? It looks like you got quite a bit here to, on your plate today to talk about.
Yeah. So, as David mentioned earlier, spring is in the air and Easter's around the corner, so there's going to be lots of baby chicks around. So I thought I would discuss a little bit about poultry biosecurity.
And speaking of poultry biosecurity, what are some good practices that we can take for that today?
Sure. We've got lots of good ideas for folks. The USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, they have a division called APHIS. That's the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. They have a program going on called Defend the Flock. So this is a very thorough website containing webinars, checklists, videos. And this is not just for poultry growers, but also for just backyard poultry operations. This Defend the Flock also has a Facebook page, so it's a really great resource. And then if you're looking to learn more about these practices that we'll get into a little bit later, the extension offices also have lots of good information. I just want to caution folks, whenever you're Googling things, going online, searching for information, make sure you're looking at websites that either end in .edu or .gov or are created by those organizations. There's some .com websites that are still facilitated by this Defend the Flock program. So I just want you to use caution and not just hop onto somebody's blog that just shares a bunch of their opinions.
It's like, hey, this is what I think. And you're just like, yeah, maybe go to one of those official websites.
Yes.
So that you can get the real the real stuff from them.
Yeah. And of course they can call a David or I anytime with questions.
Absolutely. And as folks are looking to start a flock or build maybe an existing one, what steps can be taken from the beginning?
Sure. If you're looking for chicks, I always encourage folks to purchase their eggs or growing animals from a national poultry improvement plan certificate holders. So these folks are going to be the ones that are following the sanitation procedures, vaccination programs that are set forth by the regulated poultry industry. So in short, that is called the NPIP, National Poultry Improvement Plan, and they just cover lots of different aspects of biosecurity. And so you can rest assured that your birds are going to be healthier compared to just picking one up maybe at the feed store or something.
And a few other things you can do. You can purchase day-old chicks, because that's a less risky way of disease management, correct?
Sure, yes. So whenever we're bringing in chicks, they just haven't been exposed to as many things because they're only a day old.
Right.
So they're a little bit more sanitary, I guess, if you will. The other thing to keep up with, though, about chicks is they're going to be colder little critters, so they need a heat source until their feathers grow in. And heat lamps, can cause fires. So you have to make sure you're using those properly, or maybe check into some chick warming plates if this is going to be a hobby that you dabble in quite a bit.
And also, after you get them, though, it's a good idea to the word that everybody's probably tired of nowadays, but it's a good idea to quarantine them for a few weeks just to make sure everything is okay.
Yes, in the livestock industry, it's always recommended to quarantine new animals. And this is not just for birds. It goes for any critter that comes onto your farm or to your backyard. Quarantine poultry for about 3 weeks. And in that 3 weeks, you're going to be looking for any external parasites, things like lice or mites. Anything like that that can be transferred to your other birds that you already have. It's much easier to take care of it with one bird versus that going to the rest of your flock and you have to treat everybody. There's a couple of other advantages to keeping these birds quarantined. They get accumulated to the feed that you'll be using if they were raised on something different. And they also kind of get to know a little bit about your schedule that might have been different from where they previously were.
And of course, obviously, when you're handling all these animals, it's good to practice good personal hygiene.
Yes, you of course want to wash your hands with soap and water, and this is before and after you handle your birds. So before you're handling your birds, make for sure that you're not going to be bringing in disease or any other crud from somewhere else that you've been, especially if you've been around poultry that are off your farm. And then you can also have a dedicated set of clothing, a set of coveralls, something like that, and especially footwear, whether that's boots or shoes, that's just for the chicken coop or just for handling the birds. And you'll want to clean and disinfect those regularly, but you won't wear them outside of the coop area. This is one of those biosecurity measures that just extra insurance if you have that extra set of clothes that's just for your birds.
Absolutely. Basically kind of like your work clothes, pretty much.
Yes.
But be sure to, again, clean them regularly. And also, what about germs that come in on other animals, pets, or wildlife? Because that could cause an issue sometimes.
Yes, absolutely. So you want to make for sure that your birds are secure and protected from predators. This can run the whole gamut of checking your coop or the pens for any holes or tears where any little critters can get through that might harm your birds, or just making for sure that you put those chicks or hens or whatever you have away at night, because predators are more active at night, of course, but they're also active whenever you're not around. So if you have birds that kind of open range or free range, if you will, then maybe you want to check into a livestock guardian dog. David talked about that last time we were in here together. So there's lots of options for protecting your birds. The other reason you'd want to prevent those animals, pets, or wildlife from coming in contact with your birds, just if they carry any disease. It's hard to know what what a bird might have that's just flying around, and that's how we can have widespread disease in our poultry flock. So that's kind of securing your birds as well as any growers that might be nearby, really the entire industry. Whenever you can protect your part of the world, then that kind of helps the rest of the world too.
Exactly. And like you said, provide some protection for them, because we're going to now talk about the coop. Let's talk about that. What do we need to know about the coop?
Sure. Yeah. So the coop needs to be clean and free of clutter. You don't want a bunch of sticks or junk just piled up near the coop, because those are going to attract unwanted tag-alongs. So just make for sure that you're keeping things tidy. And so when we look at coop size, it's about 2 foot per full-grown bird. And of course, that's going to depend a little bit on the breed. There's so many breeds of poultry, all the way down to little bitty banties up to turkeys or whatever you might have. But the general rule of thumb for the medium-sized birds is going to be 2 foot per bird. So if you have anything stocked heavier than that in your coop or your pen, then you need to be cleaning your coops and your pens every 2 weeks. But for the most part, if you're providing that 2 foot per bird in your coop, then every 3 to 4 weeks should be just fine. Now, you do want to make for sure you're cleaning under the roosts weekly. It just so happens, I learned this yesterday, David, that whenever the hen wakes up for the day and before she leaves the roost, she leaves a little gift right there every morning before she leaves the roost. So cleaning under that roost is going to give you some indications on their health. You know, if the feces is watery or happens to be bloody, those are all indications of sicknesses or malnutrition, things like that. So cleaning that under the roost area is very important to do weekly, if not a little bit more often. And you, of course, want to disinfect those roosts and the whole entire coop regularly as much as possible.
And like you're saying, the chickens sometimes, every morning they wake up, they leave a little present for you to check out. So what kind of diseases are we needing to do to best protect against?
Sure. So just like with any other animal, we've got internal and external parasites for chickens. So coccidiosis is something that's very common in chickens. That's an internal parasite. It's just a single-celled little critter that really wreaks a lot of havoc on a lot of different flocks, including baby calves, too. So it affects the gastrointestinal system, and it's brought in through shoes and equipment. So that goes back up to that personal hygiene that's taking care of, wearing a certain set of clothes or making for sure that you're not tracking in dirt or anything else from another farm.
And making sure you're keeping those clean as well.
Yes, absolutely. So we could even talk about like foot baths and things like that there. Anyway, I digress. Going back to coccidiosis, that's going to be evident through diarrhea, listlessness, stunted growth. It's just kind of one of those little diseases that just, it's gross, but it's super easy to treat. So if you know how your birds typically behave, then you'll know if they're acting a little restless or if they're just not feeling well. Avian influenza, there's lots of different Newcastle diseases, pelorum. There's so many different diseases that can affect birds that we want to keep an eye out for. And then we'll talk about external parasites, lice, mites, fleas. Super easy to control with a little bit of sulfur dust, and that stuff's pretty inexpensive. So just keep an eye on your birds. I mean, backyard poultry are often considered a low maintenance animal to have, especially when you're in town. So it's not something that you can set it and forget it, of course.
Right.
You have to keep an eye on those birds and make for sure that they have what they need.
Absolutely. And I think I can't remember if I told you a few weeks ago or if it was James and Jesse that just suddenly in the backyard, my mom and dad, they live in Oklahoma City, so they live right in the middle of the city, that just one day all of a sudden two chickens just appeared in their backyard and they haven't left. They just kind of hang out there. They don't know where they came from. They're still trying to figure it out, but they're just like, what do we do with these chickens? So my dad made like a little nest for them to set out there. You know, there's no dogs or anything back there, but they don't know. They have no idea where they said then they leave for a little bit and then they'll come back. And
no.
It's just like, what is going on with these guys?
The neighborhood birds.
Exactly. They're just kind of hanging out around the neighborhood. So, all right. Well, again, hey, ladies, great information you guys told us about today. Before we do get out of here, though, Davin, you did have a couple of programs you wanted to let everybody know about.
Yeah. The first one I want to mention is Walk Kansas. Today is the last day for registration. If you want to register online, you can go to walkkansasonline.org, or you can call Debbie at our Independence office to register for that. And then on April 8th, we have Hitting the Target, which is a sheep and goat workshop coming up that is being offered virtually or in person. It will be held that evening in Parsons at the Research Center there, and we'll be covering parasites, common diseases, vaccine handling, so a lot of great topics for producers. And then on April 14th at 11 a.m., we'll be having From Egg to Chick, which will be a workshop on incubating eggs at the Community College in Independence, and that one is also offered virtually or in person. Space is limited for the in-person workshop. And then on April 29th, we'll have a nuisance wildlife management and control meeting in Parsons that evening, starting at 6 p.m. Again, offered virtually as well. And Drew Ricketts, the wildlife specialist from campus, will be our guest speaker for that program. And then I didn't mention it earlier, but also coming up in May, we'll have a pond management workshop on May 4th in Independence.
Kind of a save the date thing. So
yes.
Coming up on May 4th. Well, ladies, I appreciate you coming in again. And Wendy, if somebody has a question about what you talked about today or maybe any other questions, how can they get a hold of you?
Sure. They can reach me at the Altamont Extension office. That phone number is 620-784-5337.
And Davin, if anybody has any questions about what you talked about today with wildlife kind of starting to come alive here during the spring season, how can they get a hold of you?
They can reach me by calling the Independence office. That number is 620-331-2690. But of course, if you call any of our extension offices, they can get you in touch with us.
All right. Well, ladies, again, thank you so much for coming in today. We really do appreciate it. And we will see you guys again here in a couple of weeks.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. And we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll start Open Line. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.
Spring into savings this month at Roman Chevrolet Buick. Their pre-owned lot has so many choices, like a 2018 Silverado 1500 LT, just $28,387, and a 2018 Cadillac for $37,189. Spring into Roman Chevrolet Buick, 2313 West Main in Independence, and spring out with an amazing bargain.